Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Job chapter 10 in our Bibles is where we're at tonight. It's a chapter of 22 verses, and Job is responding to Bildad. He's responded in chapter number 9 with a long response of 35 verses, and now he's coming into chapter 10 with the second part of it. And what I really enjoy about Job, and what I really enjoy of looking at Job, is just how real it is to everyday life. And I'm beginning to see this more and more as we step through these different scenarios and these different situations that Job is dealing with here, as we're looking at this theme of seeing God in our suffering. We're seeing that Job is a very real person. And much of this we can really connect with as we suffer and as we go through great difficulties here. I'd like to study this out a little bit more before I fully, this whole big thought. But I've just been thinking a little bit about what it would be like to look at Job from this perspective when a godly man has PTSD. Job certainly had an incredible amount of trauma in his life in a very brief amount of time. And Job responds in that way. He responds to all of that trauma. I read a statement from a different source recently. It said, when someone responds abnormally to an abnormal situation, that's normal. We look at Job's response and at first we say, wow, that's really abnormal. I mean, look at some of the ways he responded. He says, I just wish I'd never even been born. I just wish I could die any moment. And at first we're kind of, whoa, this is a godly man saying this. Job responds abnormally. Of course, it was an abnormal situation. And in a sense, that's normal. When there's incredible tragedies and incredible suffering and incredible pain, people respond in those different ways. And Job does. And I want you to just think about some of the things that we've seen. For example, Job's really loud about his feelings. He's very passionate about those and crying out about that. We saw in chapter 3. We saw in chapter number 6. We're going to see it again tonight. He's going to say, I'm not going to be quiet about this thing here. He's going to express his feelings. Another thing we considered is, to him, life is so terrible, he just wishes he were dead. And he's going to say that again tonight in the end of chapter number 10. He just wishes that he were dead. He's going to ask why in chapter number 3. And again in this chapter, he's going to ask why again. He feels that those who try to help are no help at all. What he's going through is so horrific, is so painful, and people try to come along and help him, but what they say to him is really not much help at all. I've never been through things as horrible as what Job has gone through. But when someone's trying to help you and they're not helping you, that's a rather disappointing thing. Job talks about that. He feels he'll never see good again. And I wonder with people who have suffered such incredible things, if maybe they look at situations and they just feel like they'll never see good again. They just wish they could go back. There's no way they can go back. And they see themselves at the bottom. They've fallen, or they've struggled, or these things have affected them in such a way that they can never go back and things will never be good again. They'll never get out of that hole that they're in. Job feels he will never see good again. And Job feels some things about God. And he's very transparent about that. He's very open about these things that he feels about God. And really, that's very helpful to us, because we might find when we go through suffering and we go through hardships that there's some thoughts that go through our minds about God. And when we struggle with them, we ought to be able to come back to this book and say, oh, Job went through some of those same things as well. Job struggles in this way with some of these things. He works through some of these things. Chapter number 9, he was inclined to take God to court. He was inclined to take God to court, but as he was inclined to take God to court, he thought, you know what? God is so great, I really can't take God to court and debate this issue and prove that I am innocent. And in chapter number 10, it's a very logically connected thing, because he thinks, this last point down here, he thinks that God is against him. At least he feels that way. When he looks at his circumstances, it kind of feels like God is against him. It kind of feels like God is still holding this sin, as it were, over his head in some way, shape, or form here. Job wants to know why God's doing this to him. In this chapter, you're going to see where Job is going to basically say, God, it's kind of like you're acting like a human being would act. It's kind of like you're acting like a person would act in like torturing me until I admit that I'm guilty in some way, or torturing me until you can figure out what I did wrong, but you know that I'm innocent. Kind of brings that out in this chapter. He's going to ask why questions in this chapter here. But he's going to come out in the middle of the chapter and he's going to make this question that I want you to really see tonight. He's going to ask, why was I even created? Now, I really want you, though there's many different topics that he's going to bring in, that's really the subject I want to zero in tonight. Because maybe when we suffer, there's going to be times in which we say, well, if this is why I'm here, if this is what I'm going to go through, why am I even here? Why was I even created? If this is the pain I'm going to experience, how could a good God create me just to go through this? Why was I even created? Why was I even given life? If this is what it's all about, if this is what it's going to be like here. And so Job is asking these questions. Now, before we jump into that, and we're going to walk through chapter 10 in a moment here, let me make two side notes here, all right? Two little side notes. We won't call them rabbit trails. All right? They're on purpose. The first thing is this, that some of what Job says is repetitive. All right, it's repetitive. Even when I had those things up on the screen just a moment ago, and I said, well, he said this in chapter 3, and then he said it in chapter 6, and he's going to say it again in this chapter. And sometimes we as Americans say, repetition, oh, it's boring, I heard this already. But you know what you're going to find? Let that repetition drive those truths into your heart and mind. When Job says, it's so terrible, I wish I could die, it's so terrible, I just wish I were dead, it's so terrible, why won't you just let me die? Let that remind you of the significance of that truth over and over and over again. This is something that he's really struggling with. And you know what? Sometimes when we're suffering in pain and agony, and we talk to this person and we tell them that, and we talk to this person and we say the same thing, and we talk to this person and we say the same thing, and when we talk back to this person again, we go around the circle and talk to them again, we bring up the subject, same subject all over again. Especially as we get older, right? We bring the same subject over again and over again. Job's in pain here, and he's still wrestling through this. And so he's going to repeat himself sometimes, and it's going to help us to get it. So don't be annoyed at the repetition. Be inspired by it. Be challenged by it. The other thing that I want you to notice about chapter number 10 is in chapter number 10, Job isn't talking to the friends. He's talking to God. Job's going through this incredible struggle, and Satan says, ah, if you touch him, he'll curse you to your face. Job doesn't do that. And now as he wrestles, he does not allow the suffering to cause him to walk away from God. He's got questions about God. He's got things he can't figure out about God. He's got situations and just struggles and things that he thinks don't match and they're inconsistent and he can't figure them out. But instead of saying, you know what, I can't figure all this out about this, I'm walking away from God. Instead he says, I can't figure all this out, let me talk to God about it. And that's a huge difference. Many people, when they can't figure it all out and God doesn't fit in their little box, they turn and run from God. Job can't figure it all out and he turns and talks to God about it. Job at times could be tempted to be agitated maybe at God or feel like God is agitated at him. But he doesn't walk away from God, he runs to God. And what a great thing it is. God knows the questions that are in your heart. God knows the struggles that are in your heart when you're going through these times of suffering. It's no surprise to him. So go to him and pour out your soul and say, God, I know it's not this way, but it feels this way and it seems this way and I need your help and these are my questions and I don't get it and I'm struggling in these areas, and pour out your soul to God. So the repetition. And then the reminder there to turn to God in these times. So we're going to consider Job chapter number 10 here tonight. And this question, why was I even created? Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you for Job and just how real he is as we look at different things on his heart. Different things he works through as he deals with suffering and trauma and difficulty and pain. Lord, we pray that you would help us, equip us, strengthen us. As we look at these things, in Jesus' name, amen. We're going to walk through this chapter with 4 points. And we're going to see those brought out here. The first point is brought out in the opening couple verses here. And Job might be asking this question. We could say it in these words. Why are you condemning me without charges? First couple of verses, verse 1. My soul is weary of my life. Weary of my life. I loathe my life. I'm disgusted with my life. And then he says, I will leave my complaint upon myself. And probably what that means, what that's referring to is, I'm not going to quit complaining. I'm going to leave my complaint right here. I'm going to keep crying out to God about the problems and the suffering and the anguish that I'm going through. And the last part of verse number 1 agrees with that. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. And again, bitterness isn't a bad attitude. It's just the pain and the hurt and the misery that's there. And he says, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to keep speaking about the pain that's in my soul. And notice now what he says about that speaking. If he's going to talk about it, who's he going to talk to? Verse 2. I will say unto God. And the rest of the time, he's talking to God. I'm going to speak to God about this issue. I'm going to talk to God about this concern that I have. And in chapter number 9, remember he ended chapter number 9 saying, I just wish that there was a mediator, an umpire, a referee that could put his hand on me and put his hand upon God and be the mediator. And Job says, but there is none. So I'm just going to talk directly to God. I'm just going to take my burdens directly to God. And what an awesome thing that we as Christians can talk directly to God. And so he's going to ask him, or he's going to make a couple different statements here. Verse number 2, first of all, he says, do not condemn me. Do not condemn me. Job is kind of almost saying, you know what? The friends have been saying that I've been doing what's wrong. It kind of feels like God thinks the same way. That God is condemning me. And then he says to God, show me wherefore thou contendest with me. Show me why you're contending with me. Give me the reason. Okay, so you're condemning me here, but what are the charges? It feels like you're against me. It feels like you're holding my sin over my head. So what is my sin? What is it that I did wrong? If I really did do wrong, I don't think that I did, but if I really did do wrong, show me what it is. He goes on and makes a third statement in verse number 3. Is it good unto thee, unto God, that thou shouldest oppress? That thou shouldest despise the work of thine hands, that thou should, and shine upon the counsel of the wicked. He kind of asked God a three-part question. He says, God, is it good for you? Do you think it's good to do these different things to me here? Is this really a good thing? The word good talks about good here, and he's asking if God would think it is good to oppress him. Oppress refers to abuse or extortion or exploiting someone or wronging them. He feels that way. Is it good that you should despise the work of your own hands? He's going to really dwell on that subject in the middle portion of it, so he's just introducing us to it here. My life, all that you did, I mean, my family and all my children and all the wealth that you gave me, all of this that you put together and fashioned with my existence here, you made this with your own hands, and now you're despising it. You're treating it lightly, unimportant. Is that good to you, God? And God, when you allowed those wicked people to come in and capture my stuff and steal it and haul it off and slaughter my servants, God, it's like you were shining on, you were blessing the wicked people. How can you be God and be blessing the wicked people and allowing these wicked people to get by with the damage that they have done to my farm and to my houses and to my lands and my servants and all that stuff? I don't get it, God. He's asking this question. Job asks, is it good unto you that you should oppress, you should despise, and you should shine upon the counsels of the wicked? He's really going to zoom in on that. And have you ever watched a cat play with a mouse? You ever seen that big pussy cat go out and catch a mouse out in the barnyard or something like that? Hopefully not in your house necessarily, but maybe. And catch that mouse and just play with that thing. And it's almost as if Job is saying, God, are you just playing cat and mouse with me? And I'm just kind of this thing that you're toying with, and you're kind of beating me around and punching me around here as, you know, you control me, you dominate me. This isn't even a competition. You're the divine pussycat. I'm the tiny little mouse here. There's nothing I can do about it. And you're just enjoying beating me around here. God, are you a potter who makes pottery, who makes pots, who makes clay pots, and who makes them so that you can just take them over here and say, look at this beautiful pot. Crash. Let me spend hours and hours making this pot and firing it and doing all these different things just so I can take it over here and go crash here. Because God, it kind of feels like that. It kind of feels like you've done all these different things for me, and now you're despising the work of your own hands. And so he asks the first question, why are you condemning me without charges? And as he really expresses this feeling, it comes out in this idea that God has made me, and now he's bringing these things against me. Why was I even created? Can you follow his train of thinking here? How that comes? Next section is verses 4 through 7, and he basically asks, why are you torturing me like a human would torture people to try to find out information? God, you're kind of acting like a human would in trying to figure things out and how you're treating me here. Verse 4, he's talking to God. He says, hast thou eyes of flesh? Or seest thou as man seeth? God, are you looking at my life like a human being would? You know how human beings sometimes look at a situation? Oh man, I saw that individual and I saw the way they looked at me, and boy, they must have been mad at me. They just had to been. And you know, we as human beings can, you know, we just take the slightest little thing and we can assume that there's something huge and great big and behind it here. God, do you look at me that way that you just kind of assume that there's got to be something bad in me? That there's got to be something that I did here? Do you look at me like a human does? Verse 5, are thy days as the days of man? Are thy years as man's days? Obviously, God is an eternal God, but he says, it's like, God, you're a human being, and you've only got so much life, you've only got so many years of existence, and you got to get me before you die, so to speak. So, man, you're going after me all you can. You know, you're just hounding me, because you got to get me before you run out of time to get me. Is that what you're like, God? Verse number 6, that thou inquirest after mine iniquity and searchest after my sin. All right, are you digging all this, just trying to find something? Thou knowest that I am not wicked. You know, what an interesting statement is it? God, are you like a man that's just trying to find some dirt on me? Are you like a man who just has a short amount of time to figure out what I did wrong, and you're really looking for my sin here? God, you know everything. You're not a man. You know I didn't do anything wrong. You know I didn't do anything to deserve this. But there's something else you know, God. Verse 7, in the middle, and there is none that can deliver out of thine hand. Is Job saying, God, you know, though, I didn't do anything that if you want to go after me, nobody can stop you. You know that. And is Job here kind of wrestling with this a little bit, saying, you know, God, it sure feels like you're just taking advantage of the situation. You're the divine cat going after me, this tiny little mouse, and you know that nobody can stop you in this. It feels like that. You know I haven't done anything wrong here. You're like a human that's just out to torture me. It feels that way, at least. Out to torture me until I finally admit that in some way I've done something that is wrong, he describes here. And so Job asks this question, why are you torturing me? Why are you going after me and hunting me like a human being? And then in verses 8, good chunk of the middle, down through 17, he asks that third question that is going to be our focus here. Why did you even create me? And I love what he says here in these verses. They're very beautiful. Verses 8 down through 12. Let's read them. Thine hands have made me and fashioned me together round about, yet thou dost destroy me. Remember, I beseech thee, that thou hast made me as the clay. And wilt thou bring me into the dust again? Hast thou not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? Thou hast clothed me with skin and flesh and hast fenced me with bones and sinews. Thou hast granted me life and favor, and thy visitation hath preserved my spirit. These verses right in here, 8 through 12, are some pretty incredible ways of describing the life. There's the life that God has given to him and how God has created him. There are several neat word pictures that are brought in here. You might call verse number 8 some manufacturing, and verse number 9 we have some pottery, and verse number 10 he uses a picture of curdling cheese, and verse number 11 of clothing, and verse number 12 of oversight. He uses several different word pictures. There's a lot of word pictures in here. And so in verse number 8, God's fashioned him. God's made him. God's put him all together. In verse number 9, God's like this potter that's made him as the clay pot. But he can't figure out. Again, he throws in that question in the second half. Wilt thou bring me to dust again? You know, the clay pot starts out, right, with dirt. They get it moist, they make it into pottery, but then when it breaks, it goes back to dust again. God, why would you do this? Are you this potter that makes nice vessels just so that you can crash them and break them? Verse number 10 is an interesting thing, and many Bible students think it's a reference to conception there. In a very picturesque way of describing how God allowed him to be conceived by his parents. And verse number 11, here, there, clothing. Clothed with skin and flesh and fenced with bones and with sinews here. And he describes God putting his body together. God, you've woven it all together and knit it all together here in this incredible, wonderful way. And then even God's blessing in verse number 12, thou hast granted me life and favor. God's favor, it's the word hesed, the Hebrew word hesed, which is God's mercy, God's loyal love here. God, you've given your favor so much in this life. Verse number 12, your visitation has preserved my spirit. God's visitation is his oversight. God was overseeing him, watching over everything so that he could bless Job. Take care of him, preserve him, keep him, guard him. And God says, or Job says to God, God, listen, in this beautiful way, you allowed my life to come into existence at conception, and you put all my different body parts and connected them all together, and you allowed me to come into life, and you gave me your favor, and you blessed me, and you watched over me, and you protected me here. God, you did all of these different things here. Why would you do all of these different things here? And then just allow me to be like a clay pot cracked and thrown into the dust again. Why would you allow me to be destroyed here? Why would you allow all these things to happen? He's really struggling with that. When you go through times of suffering, when you go through times of anguish here, do you ever ask the question, why was I even created? Why would God even allow me to go through some of these challenges that I'm experiencing here? We think about a situation where here is a young lady and she grows up in her life, and of course the years and the investment of her mom and her dad, her parents into her, and she goes through the years of school, she goes through the years of high school, she goes through the years of college, and there she is married, and there she's married for a couple years, and after just a couple years she passes away. Like as I was taking a seminary class this past spring, and it was a buzz on the college campus that there was a young lady who had passed away in that very situation. I don't know what all the details were, but do you ever stop and think, God, why did you create her like that? God, why did you go through all of those years? The amount of effort parents put into it, and teachers, and college, and the expense, and the long nights of homework, and all of that here, for her to die at such an early age. Why was she even created? And there can be so many different examples that we have here. God, why do you allow a baby to be conceived and to live for so many months and then to pass away and to be stillborn? God, why did Why was that child even created? Why, God? We can look at all these different situations and these different times that causes us to stop and to sit there and to wonder, God, it doesn't make sense to me, all the effort and all the energy that you would put into that. Verse number 13 is kind of an interesting verse, and we could probably spend a lot of time studying it out. And these things hast thou hid in thine heart. I know that this is with thee. Some Bible students say, you know, this is what Job was thinking, they think. Their perspective is, here was God all this time. He was working. He was putting this all together. But in God's heart was this idea, the day is coming when I'm going to take Job out. It was hidden in God's heart. Oh, on the outside, he was overseeing me and giving me favor and putting my body together and blessing me. But he really had a plan that was hidden there. Sometimes we kind of have that feeling. God, you were doing all these things, but you were just doing them all because really you had this plan. You were going to toast me when I got up to this point here. Almost sort of some sort of evil sense there. But what if Job is instead looking at it from a positive sense and he's saying, God, you're putting all these things together and it was in your heart. You had a plan. You had a purpose here. What if there's an element in which Job is standing a little bit in faith saying, I don't understand it, but I know, God, you have a plan. There's something in your heart. There's something that you're doing. And when Job gives this little bitty blurb here in verse number 13, it gives us an indication of what the final answer is going to be all the way at the end of the book when God says to Job, Job, listen, you don't know all of my reasons. You can't keep track of all of my creation, but I'm doing all of these things. You're never going to understand it, but I've got it all figured out. Verse 13 seems to be kind of key in this. Job says to God, these things hast thou in thine heart. I know that this is with thee. You've got all of this figured out, all of this taken care of. But he continues to struggle in verse number 14. If I sin, it feels like, God, you're holding my sin over on my head, then thou markest me, and thou wilt not acquit me from mine iniquity. God, if I sin, you're keeping track of it so that you can make sure that you hone right in and you don't lose track of me. You got me circled on the picture there so that you can take me out there. Verse 15, if I be wicked, woe unto me. No, on the one hand, if I'm wicked. On the other hand, if I be righteous, yet will I not lift up my head. I am full of confusion. Therefore, see thou mine affliction. God, look at what I'm going through here. If I've sinned, if I'm wicked, problems, woe. If I'm righteous, I can't lift up my head in pride either. That's not who I am. But I'm going through a lot of hardship, and God, I want you to see my affliction. I want you to pay attention to it, verse 16, because it's increasing. And God, you hunt me as a fierce lion. And again, thou showest thyself marvelous upon me. He says, God, it feels like you're hunting after me. You're going after me like a massive lion. And it's no problem for you whatsoever to pounce upon me. I was thinking of one of our young kids here in our church. And I was thinking that, you know, many of them know about playing basketball. And so if we had a basketball competition and one of our young kids was going to play in this basketball competition against one of the NBA great players of all time, it was going to be a one-on-one competition between them. Okay? They've played for a year or two. They're 5 or 7 or 9 years old or 10 or something like that. And they're going to play against this NBA player one-on-one. And this NBA player can dunk. This NBA player can shoot threes and make them. This NBA player can dribble through their legs and behind their back and do all these different things. And they were going to have this one-on-one competition. And here's the kid, and they're going to do their best to try to do all these things. And this NBA player could just take them to the court, could just toast them, could just obviously win over them and win big time over them. They could win marvelously over the young person. No offense to our young person, all right? They could win marvelously over me. The NBA player could too, all right? That's what Job says. It's like this lion is pouncing on me and he can do marvelously. He can just handle me. He can just tear me apart. It's no problem whatsoever because God, you're God. And I'm just this human little tiny person, insignificant here, I feel. You do marvelously against them. Amazing. You can show off all your wonders in attacking me. Verse 17. You renew your witnesses against me and increase your indignation against me. Changes and war are against me. It's like God has got me on trial here, and God brings this witness in to testify and this witness in to testify. It's like God is going to war against me, and He's constantly bringing in troops to attack me and to go to war against me. It's just like God is going wave after wave after wave in attacking me is what it feels like. That's how what he's describing. And here in verse number 18, he brings this question all the way to its conclusion. Wherefore then hast thou brought me forth out of the womb? Wherefore meaning why? Why have you brought me out of the womb? Why was I even created? That's what he's asking. And there's going to be times in which you're saying, God, listen, you made me. I really believe in Genesis chapter 1. I don't believe in evolution. I believe that you gave me life. But God, look at the horrible things I'm going through. Why would you make me just to go through these horrible things? Why would you create me just to go through these terrible situations here? And Job is asking that question. We come then to the fourth and final part here. So why can't I just die? Verse 18, wherefore then hast thou brought me forth out of the womb? Oh, that I had given up the ghost, and no eye had seen me. You know, I just wish that I would have died in the womb of my mother. Or as soon as I was born, that I would have died, and they would have whisked me off to bury me in the grave, and my grandparents would have never seen me, and no relatives would have ever seen me. I'd have never met my wife or my friends. No one would have ever seen me. I just wish I would have died right away. I should have been, verse 19, as though I had not been. I should have been carried from the womb to the grave. I just wish I would have died. Are not my days few? Cease then and let me alone that I may take comfort a little before I go whence I shall not return. Let me pause there. Job says, listen, I just wish I could die. In fact, I'm so sick. There's no doubt that I'm just about to die here. I don't have much time left. God, would you just allow me to have a little bit of comfort before I die? Would you just let me have a little bit of break from all your attacks and your tortures and the ways that you're tormenting me here before I die? Notice as he describes death, I'm not going to return in verse 21. But notice how he describes this death in the middle, even to the land of darkness and the shadow of death. A land of darkness as darkness itself and of the shadow of death, without any order, and where the light is as darkness. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about what Job describes death as like here. Because earlier Job is just saying, you know, if I could just die, there'd be some comfort. And now when Job describes death, it kind of seems to be like he's saying, even death doesn't sound that great. It's just a thing of darkness. He mentions order in verse number 22, is it? Without any order and where the light is as darkness. It's possible that Job here, as he's had in his mind this perfectly ordered set of what God is like and how God works, and now all of that has just been thrown upside down and shaken around. He feels like his whole world has been rocked. And now even the prospect of death, he's kind of wondering, you know, is it going to be really that great after all? Maybe he's a little bit shaken up here about this matter and about this future. But it's the only hope of any break, of any comfort, of any release that he can have from all the troubles and all the difficulties that Job has been facing here in his life. He's going through a hard time. He's describing all of the different emotions that he's been carrying with his life here. And when we look at Job and what he's saying in these verses, when he's asking here, why was I even created? I just wish I could die. Someone noted that the Apostle Paul in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians speaks kind of similarly. He speaks about the time when he was in Asia, and he says, I was under a lot of pressure. He says, we were utterly and unbearably crushed so that we even despaired of life itself. And sometimes when we talk about suffering here, we can tend to give people advice that, oh, listen, you can just always rejoice. You can just always be happy. You can always find a reason to be happy. And the Apostle Paul kind of tends to agree with Job in that there are some times in which it really is hard. And Paul is honest, and Job is honest. And Paul is just human, and Job is just human. And Paul is just theological, and he says, listen, I'm bearing in my body the marks of the death of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's even theological. Jesus Christ suffered excruciatingly. Part of being a Christian is that we will suffer. God's own Son suffered these things, these challenges, this pain. Those who came before Christ, Abraham suffered, Jacob and Joseph and Moses and Ruth and Hannah and David and Hosea and Jeremiah and Job suffered. They all suffered. And if in the process of suffering you find yourself asking, God, I don't know why you would have allowed me to go through all of this. I would spend years studying this. I would invest decades of my life in this. You brought me this way and formed me and brought these experiences and given these all to me. And now I'm going through this suffering that just seems to erase them all. Like one big dry erase marker board just erasing my life here. God, why was I even created? And you may find yourself asking that question. And if you do, remember Job asked a similar question. Go take yourself back to Job chapter 10. Study it out. Understand others before you, godly people, have had those feelings. And maybe, just maybe, the part of the answer is found in that nugget in verse number 13. God, it's in your heart. And I know it's with you. You understand why I don't. I don't understand all of these things. Why was I created? But do you know what? To be honest, when Job asked this question, from what we know of Job's life, why was Job created? For this very moment he's going through. All of that he experienced growing up, achieving his first yoke of oxen, seeing them grow and thrive and expand to hundreds of them, and his wealth expanding and having 10 children, all of that was for this moment, so that you could be helped and so that you could be encouraged in the suffering that you face. And Job standing there looks and says, I don't get why I could possibly be created. And you and I, 4,000 years later, say, I know exactly why he was created. God brought him into this world and brought him through all of these things so that I could be helped. You may not understand why you were created and why you went through all of those things just to suffer here. But you don't have the eternal perspective with God as God does. It's hidden with Him. And you're just going to have to trust Him. You're just going to have to rest in Him that He has a plan and He has a purpose and He works these things out. Why was I created? It's a question we ask. We may not always get the answer. So we trust and rest in God to handle those things.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.